I have to sing a bit of Andrea Bocelli if they win.
In your boxers, is that what you said?
No, I'm not in my boxers. Give me a break.
We're coming home, Nathan.
You've got the flags outside the house, I presume, have you?
Green, white and orange one.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
The story of the UEFA European Championships on OTB Sports with Heineken, official beer partner of UEFA Euro 2020. Finally together to be rivals again. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Now, you're welcome, Max. So we're continuing our Euros roadshow. The UEFA European Championships roadshow here on OTB Sports is with thanks to Heineken, official beer partner of UEFA Euro 2020. Finally together to be rivals again. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie. Now, we have been speaking with the great Brian Laudrup about Euro 92 and getting phenomenal memories from Brian. He's still with us. We're going to look ahead to the final and chat a bit about the tournament as a whole. Very happy to say we are also joined by former Rangers teammate of Ali McCoist. I didn't quite think we'd be having a Rangers reunion here on Irish radio, but it seems like we are. Ali McCoist, hello.
Joe, how are you, my friend? Okay?
I'm very well. I've just been looking at Brian Laudrup for the last 45 minutes, Ali. No man deserves to be that good at football and be that good looking and have hair like that.
Listen, it was never going to be any doubt. But I just said to Brian there before we were speaking, Joe, my wife took one look at him earlier on. He said he hasn't changed one bit. And you know something? Sadly, it's true. He looks magnificent, the man. He does. And it's just, it's so good to see him. I haven't seen him for a long time. And it's just so good to see him.
I guess, Brian, that's the nature of teammates. You're so close and then you mightn't see each other for decades.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I love about Rangers. Absolutely incredible. I have to say about Ellie as well that he's not lost his sense of humour. I mean, it's just incredible. He's a legend. I love you. It's fantastic. But it's great to speak again. It's sometimes difficult. We're all involved in our lives, but it's great to see you again.
Brian, you have said that 4 years at Rangers were pretty much as enjoyable and as good as it got in your career. It seemed like it was a great dressing room. So, you've been around the world, around Europe. It seems like the likes of Gascoigne and McCoist, that was the dressing room for you.
Yeah, I have to say that. I think it was a culture shock for me when I first joined Rangers. I think it was coming from AC Milan, where they're a wee bit different in that dressing room, I have to say. But it was what I love about Scotland, what I love about the Scottish sense of humour. It was a great club to be at, and with the likes of Coisty and Gascoigne and Durrani and all these wonderful characters. It was 4 years that I'll never forget, no doubt about that.
He fitted in okay, Ali, did he?
Oh, listen, before we start, I'll tell you the one thing about Brian. He could play. He could absolutely play, and he fitted into that dressing room superbly well. It was a dressing room where any man would struggle to get a word in with Gascoigne and Durrani and people like that. But I can remember often looking over at Brian and he would have a smile on his face and he'd be shaking his head in disbelief at what was going on around him. But it's great to hear him say that he enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed having him, because it was just brilliant to have him.
Yeah, I was watching a YouTube collection of all his goals for Rangers, Ali, this afternoon. You're not underestimating when you say he could play.
Oh no, let me tell you. Brian, we were very, very fortunate, and Brian mentioned him. I mean, that Rangers side that we had, to have Laudrup and Gascoigne in it, dear me, two of the most gifted players, I believe, honestly, in Europe at that time. Wonderful talent, and both so different. Both so different as players and indeed as people. But that was the beauty of our team, on and off the pitch. We all got on so well. We all mixed so well, and there was a great camaraderie and a great bond. But Brian was, without doubt, by some distance, one of the most gifted players that I had the fortune to play with, and one of the most gifted players ever to wear the Rangers jersey, that's for sure.
Brian, why do you think it suited you so well? Because I could imagine lots of people saying, look, you're at the likes of Bayern Munich and great clubs like that, and you go to Scotland, they're going to kick lumps out of you. Don't go anywhere near the place.
Yeah, you could say that, but sometimes you find freedom where you at least expect it, and I think that was exactly what I was given. I was given the the freedom to express myself on the pitch and obviously off it, having a lot of fun with these guys. And that's what I love about football. It's all about having a smile on your face and leaving a smile on the fans' faces as well. And I think that I just enjoyed it. The quality of the players we had at Rangers back then, absolutely outstanding. But we could enjoy ourselves and we could have fun. And I remember one of the first weeks I actually joined Rangers, Koisty came to me and said, "Brian, do you want to join us for a lunch today? We're going to a Chinese restaurant." And I was like, "Yeah, I think as a new player, you know, you always try to fit in as quickly as possible." So we went there, I think 6, 7, 8 players, and it turned out to be a quite wet afternoon, I would have to say. So I was steaming by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I the next day I came in for a training session, and I was like, "If I do that every week, I'm not going to perform at all here at Rangers." So I love that, you know, because the way you greet new players, you know. A lot of foreign players come to Ibrox and you know, from different cultures, but they all leave with Rangers in their hearts, and that's the biggest compliment I can give.
Joe, I've got to say, I remember that lunch very well. It was Brian's, it was Brian's initiation lunch, and he's right. He was steaming before he'd seen a prawn cracker or a spare rib. We knew right there and then he was going to fit in perfectly. And you did mention about him coming to Scotland and getting lumps kicked out of him. I've got to say to you, that was just in training with Big Goffey and Stuart McCall. He handled the games fine.
And off the pitch, Gascoigne didn't leave fish in your car, Brian, or any other items in your clothing. He let you off okay, did he?
I think he tried to, but he never managed to do that. No, but Gazza was one of the most generous people I've ever met, and I think Koisty would say the same thing. I think as a person, as a player, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
We loved everything about Paul Gascoigne. You never knew what to expect when you came in the mornings, right? I mean, it was hilarious at times, but what a player he was, and. The only thing I do regret that he wasn't there longer than he was, because I think he played some of the best football of his career at Rangers.
Yeah, I think that's very fair, Brian. I think I often say to folk, talking about Paul Gascoigne, I actually think we get the best of him at Rangers in many ways. I know he was fantastic, you know, Newcastle and Spurs, and he got the injury, Lazio, but I just felt he was really happy at our place, you know, particularly away from. He was always at home. Where Gascoigne was at home was on the football pitch or on the training ground. But when he was away from there, you know, I think the Scottish folk loved him. He could go and do his fishing. He could go and, you know, he liked to do the outdoor thing as well. And I think he was very comfortable with that. And I think it helped him kind of relax. And I genuinely believe, I think we get the best of him. In terms of his career, I know, having spoken to him, I did an interview with him, Brian, for an hour, maybe about 3 weeks ago, just at the start of the Euros, and I had to interview him for an hour, and I had about 3 or 4 pages of script that I was supposed to stick to, and needless to say, I think I get 2 questions out of it, and he was just away, and he was telling stories about this, that, and the next thing, but having said that, it was great to see him. He looked really, really well, and he sounded in top form. So, no, it was great to catch up with him, like it is with yourself.
It's interesting. Brian mentioned Gascoigne's generosity there, because, Ali, you go into YouTube and there's about 1,000 videos of you telling 1,000 amazing stories about Paul Gascoigne. But there was just one which kind of made me think, God, there was such a sweet-natured side to him. You can tell the story, obviously, but I think you were talking about maybe getting a present for your 4-year-old. You were saying to someone else, Gazza wasn't even in the conversation, about maybe a rabbit.
It's so true, Joe, and it just, I think it sums Gascoigne up, really. He wasn't involved in the conversation at all in the dressing room. In fact, I think I was talking to Wee Durante at the time, Brian, And I just said to him, it was Alexander, my youngest son's, my oldest son, my only son at that time, I think he just turned three. I said, we're going to get his birthday present coming up. I said, we're thinking of getting him a rabbit. He quite fancies a rabbit. And that was just a kind of throwaway line to Durante. And then the very next day, I got up in the morning, and as I got up in the morning, I could just see a kind of pair of legs disappear over the back of my garden wall. Now, the bride will tell you, I lived in the next village to Gascoigne. When Gascoigne stayed at Rangers, he lived in the next village to me, which was about 3.5 miles away, which I can reliably inform you was not enough distance for any man to be living next to Gascoigne. Anyway, as I see this shape go over the wall, down into the garden, and I couldn't believe what I saw. In the garden, there was a goldfish bowl with two lovely goldfish in it, and there was all the food to look after the goldfish and instructions and how often they should get fed. Next to that, there was a magnificent budgie's cage with a blue budgie and a green budgie. Again, all the food and the instructions and how you feed them. And then next to that could only be described as the Buckingham Palace of rabbits' hutches. This thing was magnificent, Louders, it really was. And inside it was the most beautiful white bunny rabbit, right? And just on top of the hutch was a card that said, to Alexander, hope you have a lovely birthday, lots of love, Gazza, and a big kiss on it. And I thought, that just sums him up, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. It's just so thoughtful. As I say, Joe, he wasn't even involved in the conversation. And he just heard it, and that's what he did. He's amazing.
Well, I think it's great to hear that. I mean, obviously you spoke to him a few weeks back, that he's in a good place. Yeah. I think we all hope that he will stay like that, because what a wonderful character he is, what a wonderful human being he is.
Absolutely.
Hopefully he will be okay.
Well, gents, if you don't mind, there's a lot of Irish people saying, can we end this Rangers reunion? So I might move this on, if that's okay.
Of course it is.
So the Euros, let's reflect on England 2, Denmark 1. I suspect on Danish TV, Brian, they had a certain view on that penalty.
Definitely. I think it was never a penalty in my view. I think it was, even with the introduction of VAR, I think it was incredible that they actually got the penalty. For me, it was nothing really. But having said that, I have to admit that if you look at the game, the English were by far the best team. Denmark, it was a very tough game for Denmark coming after the Czech game. We spoke about that, Koisty, as well, that it was a very tough to play in Baku with the heat. The lack of energy, you could see that in some of the players not performing to the best of their ability. But having said that, Denmark were always in the game, and especially with Damsgaard, you know, the free kick, which I believe was the first free kick goal in the Euros this year, sounds incredible. But having said that, it was what a start it was for Denmark.
What did you make of the penalty, Ali?
Well, it's not a penalty, Joe. I mean, it's quite simple and straightforward from where I'm watching. Never a penalty. Absolutely. Not even close to being a penalty. And like Brian said, I think Brian's called it absolutely 100% correct. I couldn't believe in their decisions, and I get it. But when VAR is there to help them, supposedly, and I know it's nowadays they use the term clear and obvious error, I thought that was a clear and obvious error. So therefore, I would have said to the referee, you know, come and have a look at it. And I was staggered that they didn't, because I just didn't see it as a penalty at all. But I would echo also what Brian said there regarding England's performance. I think they were the better side. And I think they played pretty well, I've got to say. Mm. I think the Danish had good periods of the game, but I thought England were the better team. But I did have concerns for Denmark before the game. Like Brian was saying when I was talking, I did the Denmark-Czech Republic game. And Denmark, again, with a better side, deserved to win. But you could see visibly after about an hour, you know, the players, I mean all the players, could feel, you could see them feel the effects of the heat in Baku, and I was concerned for the Danish lads with that heat, the effect the heat would have on them, and indeed the travelling. And I think that would probably have played a part in it. But taking nothing away from England, I thought they were very good.
But Denmark plays a very, you know, with the intensity they are playing, you know, they have been outstanding. And we knew at some point that you can't go on for 3 or 4 weeks and play with that intensity. So that was exactly what happened. Some of the players really didn't have the energy to go forward, but still it was a drama. It was a fantastic game to watch. As I say, I was at Wembley. The atmosphere, absolutely incredible. And you could sense, you know, that the English fans were very worried after the 1-0 goal from Damsgaard, because at that point, England didn't seem really to know what to do. But that changed completely with the own goal of Simon Kjær. No doubt about that.
Brian, I presume the Danish team will go home to a warm welcome from the public?
I mean, they are, no matter what happened, we said that after the Christian Eriksen collapse, that no matter when Denmark are stepping out of this competition, whether it's morally or even, you know, in football terms as champions, then they will be seen as heroes, as legends, as icons in this country. No doubt about that. I think it's fair to say that we've had some very good national teams in Denmark throughout the years, very few iconic ones, but this team has got the potential to become one of them, I think. And we are looking forward now just a year to the World Cup. If Denmark are qualified, I think we could look into a very good World Cup as well. It's a very balanced team, a lot of young players who have showed an enormous potential already, which is encouraging.
What were the Danes, Brian, saying to the media about the effect the Eriksen situation had on them?
I think it's been one of these things that you, it's difficult to actually know how you react before you see it. And I think no player ever thinks about that something like that could happen to one of your teammates, to be honest. So it's been, I think, the good thing about it is that you had games like every 5 or 6 days to think about other things, think about your next performance. It has taken its toll on this team in certain respects, but it has made this team a unit, which, as we all know, is an incredible force in football. And that's why I think we've seen a very spectacular Euro 2020 from Denmark.
So England in the final alley against Italy, will you be cheering on the English? Will you be singing "Football's Coming Home"?
No, I can absolutely 100% guarantee you, Joe, I will not be singing "Football's Coming Home". Now, I'm very surprised you even thought there was a possibility of that, mate. That ain't happening. I can tell you that ain't happening. No, I'm really looking forward to the game, I've got to say. I think it's going to be a great final. I've really enjoyed watching the Italians. England have been good. There's no doubt about it. England have been good and deserve to be there. The fact that, you know, they lost a goal last night, and that's the first goal they've lost in the tournament. I think they've gone 5 in the tournament, and another 2 before that hadn't lost a goal. It's some achievement. But it'll be tested more, I think, against this Italian side. I think Mancini has done a phenomenal job with this Italian team. I think they're 33 undefeated, and they've won about 25 of them. It's an amazing run they're on. And I think the Italians have got a really nice blend. Mancini's got a really nice blend where they've got the old school hard Italian defending that we've become accustomed to. Not saying it's the exact same as back in the day of Costa, Curta, and Maldini and that. Maybe it's not of that quality. But Bonucci and Chiellini are proper Italian defenders. And they've got a talented midfield, but they've balanced it. I think they've got flair and pace up front with Chiesa, Immobile and Insigne. I think that's a nice blend as well. So he has got a nice mixture within his side, Mancini. And I think that I think they have real pace up front, the Italians. And I thought they were outplayed for long periods of the game. I've got to be honest with you. By Spain, and I don't necessarily think the best team won that night, although the Italians found a way to win the game, but they handled that fine. They find a way to manufacture themselves in the game, and they did that, and they've got, as I say, the main threat I thought they had against Spain was the pace. And it wasn't, a lot of it was pretty direct football. You know, it was a kind of long ball over the top and challenging Garcia and Laporte. And it worked. It absolutely worked. So I think England will start slight favourites. Obviously, home advantage. But I tell you, you wouldn't be ruling the Italians out. No way.
No. And Brian, the Italians caught the eye really from the opening night. Often they start slowly in tournaments and build. But right from minute one of this tournament, they've been very impressive. How do you see this game Sunday?
I think the Italians have been the most spectacular team at these Euros, in my view. I think having played in Italy, where you know that the result is everything. I mean, no matter how you get there, just win. And then to see Italian football play a very modern style, want to control games, want to score goals. 1-0 is not enough anymore. If you can get the second or the third, you're going for it. And that's what I love about it. Exactly as Costa says, they've still got the old school defensive line, but they have got so much more nowadays with even midfielders, you know, the ability they have. They can carry the ball. They've got players who can take players on, creativity. I mean, it's top class. And perhaps in some respects, if you look at the Italian league nowadays, it's not nearly as strong as it was perhaps 20, 25 years ago. But that has made Italian football change, I think, because nowadays they can't really just defend for 90 minutes and hope, you know, for just one goal and that's it. Nowadays they have to control the game. They have to attack. And I think that looks perhaps more likely to be the way the Italians would like to do it going forward. And I really applaud that. I think they deserve to win it, to be honest. I have to admit, as Costa says, having, you know, played 6 games at home out of 7, I mean, that's a home advantage. Incredible. But again, the Italians have got what it takes. So it's going to be a cracking game, hopefully.
Ali, on England, and this is possibly a redundant point because it's working for them, and so therefore all bets are off. If it's working, it's working. But there's a constant sense that there's maybe more in this English side, and Southgate has been pragmatic from the beginning. Trippier at left back day one. He's not budging from Rice and Phillips. He has set his stall out. That's how he's going to play. And even against a tired Danish side last night, when you felt there were more goals there for England, Jack Grealish gets taken off promptly and they go to 5 at the back and they see this out in, again, a very pragmatic way. So you can't at all criticise Southgate, and I don't think this is a criticism of Southgate, but it's just very striking how pragmatic they are, and you do have this sense looking at some of the players they have, God, there could be more in this team.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at that side. I've mentioned the one thing that has impressed me more than anything about the England side is actually the way that they've kept clean sheets and only lost the one goal in the tournament. And a lot of that would be down to, obviously, the defence, but Rice and Phillips. Phillips has been a real find this tournament, I've got to say. He's been fantastic. And Rice, as you know, is a very, very clever player. And the beauty of Gareth is, I have to say, just about, and you've called it, Joe, he's just about got every decision correct. You know, well, he has. I mean, the first game, there was a question mark whether he would go with Sterling, who hadn't been playing. He couldn't get in the team, the Man City team, because of Foden and Mahrez. So there's a little bit of a form doubt there. Was he going to go with Shaw and indeed Chilwell at left back? He plays Trippier at left back, and then Phillips come into the team. So everybody, straight away before the game, everybody's asking these questions. He gets it right. They win the game. And as Brian said, the result is effectively the most important game. The weakest performance they put in, I think, believe it or not, was against Scotland. The game at Hampden, I don't know whether they get involved in the rivalry, they get caught up in a little bit mentally, but it's the only game where they haven't really, when I say dominated, they haven't looked at their best, shall we say. But you're absolutely spot on. I mean, they have got so much talent. I think they've got as much talent in forward areas as I can ever, and I mean ever, remember an England side having. You're talking about Sancho. You know, I think he's in one start. Foden's in a couple of starts. We're all expecting Foden to start every game. He hasn't done that. He's been pretty. He clearly likes Mount, which I get also. Everybody, myself and included, has been clamouring for Jack Grealish to start games. He hasn't done that as well. You know, Bellingham's another one. They've just got so much quality. You know, at the start of the first couple of games, I've got to be honest, Joe, I didn't think Harry Kane was looking sharp at all. Anything but. However, I wasn't for dropping him. There was one or two question marks, you know, should they leave him out and bring Calvert-Lewin in? I wouldn't have left him out, you know, because I think a centre-forward will always return with his goals, and Harry Kane is doing that. So, two things. I think everything that's happened so far, Gareth has got just about spot on. Listen, even to the point, I wasn't happy to see Grealish get taken off again after coming on. I think nobody, especially if you've played the game, you don't like seeing that. But the one thing that he has got more than anything, Gareth, he looks as though he's got an entire, and I mean entire squad of players that really believe in him and believe in what they're trying to achieve. You know, you guys like Cody, who hasn't had a minute's action, Mings, who played really well and obviously and has been left out since Maguire. You haven't heard a peep, and they seem to be a real, real solid unit. So I think there is more to come from them. Certainly, and going ahead in future tournaments, because they have had great youth sides recently, where I think their 17s have won the World Cup and their 19s have won European Championships. And Gareth, to be fair to him, has, you know, continued the cycle in terms of giving these guys that won those tournaments an opportunity at full international level. So the scary thing is there might be more coming from them, Joe.
Yeah. Brian, are you looking forward to the next decade of English domination?
Yeah, I think you have to be honest and say, I mean, England, again, last night, were definitely the better side. And I love watching players like Costa says, you know, Kane, especially in the second half, he was the difference. Sterling as well, and that was the difference between the Danish team and England last night. Was England could just put on players like Grealish, Foden, attacking players of fantastic, you know, individual brilliance. We didn't have that, and that shows you where England is heading. Yeah, he's cautious, Gareth Southgate. I understand that. He wants this trophy to come back home. 66 is a long time ago, and I really understand why he's people are craving that. But he's got the team to actually achieve it, and they could become a formidable force in years to come as well.
Mm. Fellas, I'll get a prediction from you. First, though, Ali, give me your player of the tournament thus far.
Do you know something? I've been pretty impressed with Raheem Sterling, I have to say. As I said, there was a few question marks at the start of the tournament, guys, whether he was going to start. Like I mentioned before, he wasn't a constant figure in the Manchester City side, but he's got it stuck by him and showed a fair bit of loyalty. And I think it's been repaid by Sterling. I think he's been terrific. And if he plays well in the final, and England won it, I genuinely think he could be player of the tournament. But I think also I would definitely give a mention to Patrick Schick, the Czech Republic centre-forward, who scored 5 goals and two daggers in my heart when he scored twice at Hampden, to be honest with you. But I think we can maybe certainly agree he scored certainly one of the goals of the tournament with a long-range effort over Big Marsh's head from just about the halfway line. So I think he has looked the part as well, and 5 goal return for the Czech Republic is no mean achievement. But I think, as I say, if you're looking for a player of the tournament, you know, I think if Sterling plays well in the final and England lift it, he could get it.
Yeah, been amazing turnaround in his fortunes over the last month. Brian, who's caught your eye? Who have you enjoyed?
I've enjoyed a few players, I have to say that. But I would definitely say Sterling as well. Change of pace, even in extra time, was, well, I thought, where did he get that from? I mean, he creates a lot of space for his teammates. He creates a lot of things when he's on the ball. He scored goals, you know, creating goals as well. He's been very a fantastic player for England. I like Kane in perhaps the last 2 or 3 games I've seen him play. He's been exactly the player we knew he was. and he means everything to this England side. But I have to go as well with some of the Italian guys. I think Chiesa has made a difference, but I love Insigne. I mean, that left-hand player, he could be the difference on Sunday. He's small in stature. He's got everything in terms of technique. He can take players on, score goals. He's almost a playmaker playing on the left-hand side, and I think he's been outstanding. So for me, he could be one as well if he lifts the cup on Sunday.
So look, Sunday can go either way. I think everybody's agreed on that. It should be a really fascinating game. Brian, who wins and why?
I think England will win it. It will be tough and it will be a dramatic game. I said early on that the Italians deserve it the way they have presented themselves. Fantastic football. I think the English are so close now. We're talking 55 years. They can't slip it now. They have to get a grab on this one. And I think it's been a lot easier for them in terms of traveling. They are not as tired as some of the players were, and especially Italy against Spain had to do a lot in terms of playing extra time. They lost Spinazzola, who's been an outstanding left fullback. So I think England will win it 2-1.
Okay. Ali, how do you see it?
there's nothing between the two sides. I think Brian's correct with his assessment. I think it's worth a mention, Spinazzola looked fantastic. He'll be a big miss for the Italians. Emerson will come in there probably again at left back. And I'll tell you exactly how I see it going. I think it'll be a draw after 90 minutes. I really do. I can't split them. I'm leaning towards England. If I was going to pick MD in 90 minutes, I would pick England. But I think it'll be a draw after 90 minutes. I can't split them. And then I would say to you this, Joe, I think if it goes to extra time, England, and there's a winner in extra time, it'll be England. However, I think if it goes to penalties, I fancy Italy. Am I allowed to say that?
No. Do you know what? That answer makes perfect sense.
Thank you.
It does. I totally see that. Yeah. England have the talent off the bench and the energy, but then it goes to a penalty shootout. Yeah. There is something about the Italians' mentality. It swings back in their favour, doesn't it?
That's exactly what I was trying to... You probably put it across a lot better than I did, Joe. But I think if it goes to extra time, I think England could win. And if they don't win it in extra time, I think the Italians will beat them in penalties.
Very good. Well, listen, Brian Laudrup, we're going to let you go. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on and to hear your tales of 92. We're going to chat to Ali McCoist a bit more about his career. So, Brian Laudrup, for the time being, might talk to you again sometime down the line. Thanks so much and farewell.
It was a pleasure.
There you are, Ali McCoist and Brian Laudrup with us. And this is our UEFA European Championships Roadshow on OTB Sports with Heineken, official beer partner of UEFA Euro 2020, finally together to be rivals again. Drink responsibly, visit drinkaware.ie. So we have chatted to Brian Laudrup about the extraordinary events of Euro 92. Stay with us, plenty more to come. Ali McCoist is going to stay with us. We're going to chat to him about some of his Euro memories and his career. So Ali McCoist on the way.
The story of the UEFA European Championships on OTB Sports with Heineken, official beer partner of UEFA Euro 2020. Finally together to be rivals again. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.